Hello, my name is Nina Dewar. I'm head of exhibitions here at the Design Museum. And the exhibition I'm going to give a tour for is called Sustainable Futures, Can Design Make a Difference? Showing at the Design Museum from the 31st of March to the 5th of September 2010. So Sustainable Futures is really about a snapshot of the themes of everyday life and how design makes an influence on those themes. We have chosen five themes that we feel are relevant to how we live and work in not just the urban environment, but just on a general level, which is cities, energy and economies, materiality, creative citizen, and food for thought, all of which are things that affect our everyday lives, and where we're sort of not looking at just products or objects that are sustainable, but really the infrastructure of cities or how economy plays a part in the way that designers approach sustainable issues within their practice, and also trying to look at projects that are not just completed and tested out by the general public already, but really trying to tap into things that are ideas-based and trying to sort of push the way in which we approach sustainable within design and architecture. And without trying to push these ideas, we won't really know whether they are successful or not. So the ideas here is to show a breadth of works that has already been tried and tested, and also the ones that are sort of on the cusp of perhaps making a huge difference, or others that are maybe more questionable of saying, you know, these are great ideas, but how will they work in the real world? How will they work for a bigger audience? So I'll take you through the five clusters and highlight a couple of examples in each one to give you sort of a taster of what these sustainable futures are or might hold. The first one in cities is Curitiba. It's a large city in the south of Brazil. And for me at least, rather surprisingly, it's been hailed as the most environmentally friendly city in the world. And it started off with the mayor who in the 70s got in power and thought there are just so many different things that we can do to improve the way in which the city works, and also with very little money. So there wasn't really an interest in sustainability or green issues at the time, but he really saw the potential of how to change the infrastructure of transport, the way in which public spaces were used on a much more friendly basis, and also the whole recycling scheme, which even at that time, and also for a continent who might not be able, due to its infrastructure, focus so much on it, really changed around the way in which governments worked with all the issues that are sustainable. The complete opposite end of the scale is the Masdar development by Foster and Partners, and we all know it's a major architecture practice who've created a number of amazing buildings across the world, and they were approached by a company in Saudi Arabia to look at how they can create a city from scratch. And not just any city, but a carbon-free city. And I guess that's why the Curitiba city and Masdar are such opposite. Here you have one city who's really tried to create something with the existing material they have and already hailed as the most sustainable city in the world. And then you have Masdar, on the other hand, where you have a plot of land and they start from scratch in creating something that will effectively push the boundaries of how we work with sustainable issues for the future. Money-wise, there's also huge amounts of money poured into a project like this, but it's interesting from sort of an experimental point of view as well to see how far you can really go with addressing sustainable issues, not just in architecture, but just in the way that we live in a city. And although you kind of need to delve into the project a little bit more than what I will explain, I think what is interesting is that because it was a plot of land, you had really the world at your hands of doing what you wanted with it. And even to the point of in which direction do you build the streets? And being such a hot country, they were able to put the streets and the angle of the city in a way that offered the most shade. So all already from that as a starting point, you use nature and buildings as a way of communicating sort of the needs of the people. And this is not a blue sky thinking project, this is actually happening. So the first building that's now been built is the university, which is sort of the centre of the city, showing the way in which they've used materials and also how they created the living accommodations for the students. But as the model also shows, everything that happens below ground is also all the transport means, so that the whole top level is pedestrianised, whereas everything else that has to do with the way in which you get to and from the city is underground. On to the next. And what we wanted to tell within energy and economies is that it's quite a complex subject, even from a political standpoint, where you have a current economy which is very much based on carbon economy, whereas you have everyone who's working very hard for a sustainable environment are pushing all the advantages of a solar economy. But as much as those kind of big questions are complex and take a long time to actually put in place, there are a number of projects which embrace solar power, if you like, in often quite humble ways. You have, for example, the Freiburg solar settlement in Germany, which was started in the mid-80s and completed early 90s, which kind of looked at how you can create an environment for people living and working just by having solar power as the main resource of power. And, of course, integrating architecture in a very strong way and creating sort of an identity for a settlement, which maybe is a different aesthetic to what we normally are used to, but still has lots of messages to show for what the future might hold. The other end of the scale is what we've already shown at the Design Museum, which was the solar boat from Designs of the Air in 2008. And it was originally the solar shuttle, which was launched on the Serpentine Lake as a means of public transport. And although this is now not a new project, I think it's an interesting project because of the way in which it has developed over the last 2 to 3 years, where the designer, Christoph Behling, has looked at this concept he created with the panels initially for the shuttle, but how it now can also be applied to everything from the roofs of mosques to more eccentric or modernised rickshaws across the world, and trying to sort of embrace solar power in loads of ways that are accessible to us as users and not just thinking that they are high-tech commodities. And I guess another project that we are all familiar with is the Magna Radio, which also won the Best Product Award for Design, British Insurance Designs of the Year last year. And again, my initial point of how economies is a complex issue, and in the sort of the landscape of politics, it can be quite tricky to grasp. But I think also on a more sort of low-tech and small-scale basis, the Magna Radio really represents how a small community can treasure and really grow from how a more an insular economy is used for example, producing these radios. The designer, an Indonesian designer, instead of going to the big city after he finished his education, went back to his local village and realised that the resources on the land, which was very much about planting trees, had huge potential. And also there was a big community who were unemployed. There are, of course, very strong craft traditions in Indonesia. And by merging the two of creating new workplaces as well as reintroducing craft skills with also a relatively modern design, he was able to create the Magna Radio using locally sourced wood and introducing new skills to his nearby community. And I think, again, it also shows this whole consumer supply and demand expectation that we all have, because of the way in which these trees are planted, you can't produce in abundance all the time. I think our design museum shop is finding that we can't order things all the time because they simply have a backlog and they try to meet it, but it also is in pace with the way in which the trees grow, and of course they replant things all the time, but there is a sort of a slow making process which is quite charming and also address the whole thing of how we expect things to be turned around extremely quickly. On to the next one. It's materiality, and quite a few projects in here which relates to fashion, I guess. The first one is on the maps by the British fashion designer Christoph Raeburn. And he was originally commissioned some years ago by a company called Worn Again, which is also represented here, about how you can reappropriate existing material into new products. And when he was researching that project, he also came across a lot of material from the MOD for their parachutes, but the material had actually been made sort of not fit for purpose for parachuting, but of course still the material was very useful for other things, and being a fashion designer he saw that why not create a new type of MAC with this material. So he's come up with not just a design that's new and innovative in terms of the use of materials. He also uses tailoring in the way that the colours are fused together. But I also think it says something about sustainability in the way that we often know it. Products can look quite recycled or green, whereas here you have something which looks rather sophisticated and it doesn't shout sustainability. It's more the subtle approach, but where you have sort of the clever entrepreneurship of Christopher, who's now selling this as a commercial range. He's created a relationship with the MOD, and they see also the advantages of reusing their material. So I think there's sort of richer stories to be told than just the product itself with a lot of these projects. Then you also have Puma, of course one of the major brands, sports brands in the world, and they felt that they weren't always great in terms of addressing the whole issue of material used for their production lines. And what they did was commissioned the American designer Yves Bihar to look at how to minimize materials from manufacturing to the point where you actually take the product home. And the key product, I guess, where not just material but also weight was a huge influence, were their shoes and the shoe boxes. So the initial idea was very much about, let's just scrap the shoebox altogether. But of course, there are lots of practicalities involved in terms of how you then put together the shoes from the manufacturing point of view to through to the shops and then home. And some kind of structure was still needed, but a huge amount of cardboard and pulp, if you like, was discarded, which lightened the weight. And also the whole thing of packaging in terms of the shopping bag that you take home with you. Here you had a bag and a cardboard box from the very outset, from the production line through to the shops, and also how you take the box with you home. And of course, as much as it's a new design and a way of promoting how great the brand is, I think for them it's also a great business sense because of the reduction in material. They look at saving billions of pounds in transportation and material costs. So again, the sort of the holistic viewpoint of such a big brand, it's not just to make them look better, but it also has a lot of sort of credentials in terms of how they spend their money wisely. Creative Citizen, we wanted really to have somewhere in the exhibition where, as much as we hope that people will sort of be able to relate to a lot of the projects in the other clusters, to feel that this is not exclusively activities that are for the people who work in design, who have great interest in design, but also projects where everyone feel that they can be involved, whether it's to do with how they look at their own behaviours, but also how they can get hold of products that sort of they can interact with before they're actually completed. And I guess a lot of these projects are somewhat open source in the way that things are now with internet made available online. So you have already three projects here which illustrate the benefits of it. Some are more conceptual than others, but for example with the fold stools and the indie furniture, both of which are things that you can order online, but the idea with the fold stools is that you have a pattern that you can print out, and with the cardboard that you have locally, you can use that pattern to create your stools. These are intended for children, not so much adults. And then with the same designer has developed a bracket system where you order the brackets, but the shelving itself is something that's intended to be made wherever you're based. So it could be, in our case, we chopped up a tabletop from the Dieter Rams exhibition, which otherwise would have been made redundant. And you have a shelving system that we can still be using after the exhibition for storage in curatorial or whatever. But it just shows that the possibilities are endless if you sort of just put your mind to it. A more conceptual project is the hydrogen car called Common. And again, it's an open source idea where a community has come together looking at the car industry, which notoriously is very secretive. Usually you only get to know the design of a car and all its credentials once it's in a fair or a showroom. Whereas here you have a concept that's being offered online, and the idea is that designers or engineers or the general public at large can feed into the goods and the bad things about the current design, which then the overall team will take into consideration. And it's not just about the styling of the car and the design and its functionalities, but it's also about transport as a whole. So the services within the car is sort of trying to reflect the needs for the future. So today we are sort of used to GPSs and how you get from A to B in a pretty easy way, but this is trying to push it further and see how the whole transport experience can be much more holistic and integral as a whole. The last project in here, which I think is also demonstrating how as citizens we can be much more involved in the creative process, is Joan Look Designs for Schools, where you have the Sora Foundation inviting a series of designers and architects to come in and advise schools, whether they are being renovated or they're being built from scratch, inviting the architects to work with the pupils in a very sort of all-embracing project where, from the very outset, the students set the brief. These are all the way down to primary school students, so they obviously have very little experience working in such a way, but it's not just about coming up with great designs, it's also teaching them new skills socially and also how you interact with adults in perhaps a more positive way. And I think the outcome of these projects are very much a reflection of, you can see that children have had some sort of involvement in these processes, whether it's Paul Smith, who's been invited to design the new school uniforms, and of course knowing what his designs stand for, joined up with kids, they represent something which is certainly much more cheerful than what we know school uniforms to be like today. And as well with the buildings, where children have maybe even for 2, 3 to 4 years followed the whole development from plans, you know, telling these architects we want toilets, we want tiles with colours, we want all these things that will enliven our environment but which will also encourage learning. And I think that is kind of the key point with this project, is the positive repercussions of these interactions between architects and pupils, how you end up with a very successful project where people feel that they've had some input, they're not just handed over a building which may not actually fulfill their needs. And then the last theme is food for thought. And this is maybe where you have more of the more experimental projects. I think what this sort of area demonstrates is that we, of course, had before the Industrial Revolution ways of eating locally and seasonally, which was part of everyday life and never questioned it. But as time has gone on, we are now just so used to having any type of food available, at least in the Western world, at any time of year, and often forget about the consequences of the supply and demand that we expect from our supermarkets. It also addresses here the way in which we address eating and also how we can use, again, design and architecture to make people more involved in the way that they choose their food. For example, with edible estates, the architect Fritz Haag has created a number of projects and initiatives, both in the US and here in the UK, where he goes to local communities, and in this case, an estate very close to the Design Museum, where there was already a community of great flower lovers. So you had competitions, annual competitions of who grew the most beautiful flowers, and that was all very nice, but really didn't do anything more than that. Whereas there was a dead plot of land, which he then said, why don't we try and grow our own vegetables, and trying to sort of get the community involved in this. So he designed this plot of land to accommodate all the basic needs of a vegetable patch, but not just so it looks like your ordinary allotment, but actually have sort of create an aesthetic to it, which means that people will look after it and care for it. And that is something that across generations will have some impact, and from kids being involved to the pensioners. And although it may feel that this isn't the biggest or the greatest design project, it still shows that designers and architects can very much be involved in the local community, work with the citizen to really try and embrace this whole idea of trying to push ideas and be more creative about how you use your own space. Following on from that, you have the French designer Mathieu Lehanner's Local River, which bases the idea of, now that we all look at eating locally, what about local and home farming? And home farming, especially in cities. And even for those who then might not have a balcony or a green patch, how do you potentially grow things indoors? His concept design is very much around the whole ecosystem of fish and plants. And this tank in particular is looking at how you can be delivered fresh fish, have it growing and breeding there for a while until it's edible. And then also through that, the plants that will benefit from the water system. So you effectively have both fish and plants, vegetables, that will feed you. But again, I guess, as I mentioned at the very introduction to this tour, is that you could always question, how will this feed a family of four? How will this work in practice? And although it may or may not do so, I think it's still this whole idea of challenging our behaviour and also our ideas about, you know, how we eat and how we get to get hold of our food. Is it just the way of going back to the way we used to do before the Industrial Revolution, or is it actually doing new things but trying to think more locally and seasonally still?